Hey everyone, it's John. I am out and about, as they say in Canada, day before Thanksgiving, getting my good old smoking rub for tomorrow. I'm going to smoke a turkey, and I got some meat rubs from Meat Church Barbecue, and they actually commented on X. They said that I should use their rubs for the turkey. So I got the all-purpose, which I've used before. It's really good. I've got the mesquite, which is also probably good, but I haven't used it. And I've got the honey hog, which I'm expecting to like because I like sweet stuff. My wife likes spicy, but, you know, I accommodate. I aim to please. So we have 6 racks of ribs, and then we got the turkey. And I'm going to use all 3 of these things. And maybe, just maybe, this will be the beginning of a beautiful relationship where I can sponsor on the podcast Holy Cow Barbecue. I'd love to do that. They did not pay me to say any of this. But I love sponsoring things that are near and dear to my heart. And of course, smoked meat is up there on that list. So that's why I'm out and about, in part. And, you know, I'll tell you, the little barbecue, not a secret, but just in my experimentation, what I'm planning on doing on the ribs. You know, I've done the 3-4-5 method, you know, 3 hours in the smoker, 2 hours wrapped with like sugar, and you know, I've used maple syrup too. I've used different things, some kind of a sweetener with a butter, and then 1 hour with a sauce. Now I skip that. I do a dry rub, but I tried the time before last when I was doing it, and I loved it. It was the best ribs I've ever made, to do just kind of a low and slow, 7 hours. And then just, you got to be careful because you don't want to dry it out. So the last 2 or 3 hours, you just keep smoking, you keep spraying apple cider, not apple cider vinegar, actual apple cider, and it caramelizes. And those are some of the best ribs. And you don't need a sweetener because the apple cider is the sweetener. So I'm going to try that again. We'll see how that works. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to let you know if I remember to how the turkey went. Someone ask if I forget. And I've never actually done chicken either. So this is going to be a first step for me to do a bird, to smoke a bird. But enough about barbecue. I decided to do this podcast while I'm out doing my errands because I listened to another podcast by my friend Chris Arnzen, who hopefully he would still be friendly with me. Hopefully we're on friendly terms. I like him. I haven't stopped liking him. I've been on his show a few times. But this whole Tobias Riemenschneider, Joel Webbin controversy is something he's been addressing. And some of you don't know what I'm talking about, and that's perfectly fine. You know, skip the podcast. There's other stuff I'm going to be talking about that I'm sure in other podcasts that I'm sure will be more interesting to you. But for those of you who have asked, and there are still people wanting questions answered, I figured I'd put this out for the sake of unity and in an attempt to be a peacemaker. Because what I heard on the podcast with Chris Arnzen's guest from Scotland, a pastor from Scotland, is a perspective that you're not going to hear online very much. And that is a very, I would say, pro-Tobias Riemenschneider perspective. And most of the perspectives I'm hearing now, most people have concluded that Joel was misrepresented at the very least, slandered at the very worst by Tobias, and that Tobias needs to own this. And then, you know, they can work together towards, or even separately, towards addressing some of these underlying issues that Tobias is upset about and concerned about. And I think some of them rightfully so, perhaps. So there are people, though, who don't have that opinion. And so I want to, I don't know if they're on X as much, but I want to talk to those people. And I want to hopefully build some bridges, if possible, and let you know, at least from my perspective, how I think some of this stuff can be navigated if a conversation were allowed to take place. And that's the thing that's been the holdup. And I, you know, I'm grieved by it. I mean, the New Testament is so explicit on the importance of getting things right. Don't even let the sun go down on your anger if you're angry. If, you know, whether you're angry or not, you remember your brother has something against you, go and make it right with your brother before making an offering, right? This is the New Testament. It's the whole, like, point of the ecclesiology of the New Testament. It seems like that's at least an overriding point, is unity in the body. Paul says to be unified so often. And of course, even in the early church, there's disunity over various matters, but we need to strive for unity. And I'm just disappointed. I'll put it that way. I'm disappointed with the way things have gone down here. And I want to talk about Joel a little bit and then address some of these things. So from my perspective, Joel has done everything that I would expect him to at this point, in my opinion. Is there more he could do that someone could come up with? Perhaps. But initially, when this whole thing started and I talked to Joel, I was concerned that he had, in his two-hour podcast, said some things that sounded arrogant. And I think he needed to apologize for that, or at least own it. And he has. He has publicly owned it, that he said arrogant-sounding things, and he said because they were arrogant. And what else can you hope for in that scenario, right? What else is there left to do? The other thing was, I did have some conversations with guys concerned about a rising undercurrent of Nazi-esque ideology. And I told some of these guys, yeah, I share some of that concern. I don't see any institutional credibility behind any of this, but yeah, there's certainly some guys, mostly Anon accounts who, and I don't actually have a problem with Anons, by the way, but I think there's reasons for having pseudonymous operations. I mean, even our founding fathers had somewhat of a pseudonymous attempt to justify the Constitution in the Federalist Papers. So it's part of the American tradition in a way. I'm not against that, but I do think you got to be careful because, yeah, it does give you this opportunity to think that you're saying things without accountability, and you can say some really off-color things because it doesn't come back to bite you. So that said, I have seen some insensitive things. I've called some of it out, by the way, and said, look, this shouldn't say that. That's not right. But there's a larger concern that this is growing, and this is feeding into some anti-Jewish hatred, I guess, for lack of a better term, and Nazi ideologies being imported. And so I have shared some common ground with that. I said, yeah, like that, like, you know, ideology doesn't lead you to good places. And even if these guys don't have any institutional credibility, like, I'm concerned for them and what it'll do to them. And so, sure, like, I've done podcasts on this, and we've talked about this. Most explicitly, I'd say the one I did with Joseph Spurgeon not too long ago on ideology, and go check it out. But Joel, I just want to say this about Joel. If you're concerned that Joel has a soft spot here, Joel has now publicly, I think, shown where he stands on this. And part of that is he helped with Joseph Spurgeon, and Joseph Spurgeon admitted this yesterday on my podcast, that he helped Joel helped Joseph craft this statement, which serves as an alternative to the Antioch Declaration. And it goes after Nazi ideology, and Joel's fine with that. Joel is in support of that. So if you're concerned that Joel's not publicly counter-signaling that stuff, and if you're concerned that Joel's arrogant, I've seen, at the very least, what you would have to consider progress in those areas. Like, if that was your concern, you should be very happy that Joel is making those movements, making those decisions. I don't see, though, a lot of happiness from the people that say that that's their concern. And with Tobias, my expectation was from the beginning that he's going to, in a timely manner, try to rectify things with Joel. And also, when it became obvious that he had misrepresented Joel, which I've told him I think he did, especially on the issue of whether or not Joel was making up the fact that he was pressured into excommunicating and church disciplining this guy in his church who shared a meme that was insensitive. You know, I think he needed to own that. I think he needed to say, look, I misrepresented the conversation there, or at least insinuated that Joel wasn't under this pressure when in fact he was. And so I haven't seen that happen yet. And maybe that can still happen, but we're talking a month now. And so I think for those who have watched my two-hour video where I talk about the Antioch Declaration, they probably think I'm slanting more towards Joel. And if there's a reason that it sounds that way, it's because of what I just told you. I mean, I did have expectations in my mind for both and what would be required to bring peace about. And Joel seems to be making the kind of steps you would expect. I haven't at least yet seen that kind of thing from Tobias. Doesn't mean it still can't happen, but I guess I'm disappointed that this hasn't been dealt with. It hasn't been as important as I would think it would be. And it doesn't mean that Tobias doesn't think it's important, but the whole thing's just a bad look, especially coming out with a declaration that you're a framer of in the middle of all this, that at least is tangentially connected to the issue that is in question about Joel. So it'd been much better to get that rectified and then together in united spirit, come up with something to go against this, the ideology that you're both concerned with. That's not how it went down though. So anyway, Joel has been open with me to communication, with Tobias. There have been ebbs and flows in my mind about whether, about the level to which both are interested in communicating with one another and what those terms should be. But at this point, I'm comfortable to say it appears to me that, one side wants a church court that can make somewhat of a binding decision, and the other side still wants to have more of a conversation that would be perhaps mediated, but wouldn't have that level of gravity to it. That would, and you could maybe chalk this up to, there's one side that doesn't see these issues as perhaps unnavigable as the other side. In other words, you know, I think there's people on the side of Tobias, if you want to call it that, who think that these issues are very basic level doctrinal matters that you need a church court for. You need, it's like a conversation you would have with someone perhaps who's in a deviant theology. Like, you need a council called on this. And there's the guys I think that are more on Joel's side of this issue think, like, we're not saying things that are all that different. We can actually work out an agreement here. And I've come to realize that without knowing that those were sides, that I guess I fall on the side that is viewed more as a pro-Joel side in that way, is in that I do think this can be navigated without that gravity. And so I want to explain to you why I think that, in part at least, in major part. And it has to do with what I heard on Chris Aronson's podcast. And again, I want to like bend over backwards to say, I actually like Tobias. I've had him on the podcast before. I think he actually has taken some very courageous stands, especially on COVID. I like Chris Aronson. I don't know anything about the guest he had, but you know, I'm assuming that guy's all, you know, operating in good faith. So I'm coming at it with that assumption. Of course, every day that goes by without this being rectified is not good. And it doesn't do good things for Tobias in the court of public opinion, at the very least, we'll put it that way. But I do think that, I'm going to attribute the best possible motives I can. And in doing that, I want to steel man what I heard on Chris Aronson's podcast, what the perceived issues are on at least a certain quarter of one side, and what I think may be the misunderstanding. So the first thing is that where you think this issue started will influence the conclusion you draw. Did this whole issue start with Joel Webbin, or did this issue start with Tobias making a meme public that should not have been public? I think both sides agree this should have been private. Now, one side is saying, and this is the prevailing side in my mind on social media, that Joel did not make this public. This was gradually made public by people like James White and Doug Wilson, who somehow got a hold of this meme, this privately shared meme to Tobias, and they shared it publicly. They issued concerning statements about it and made it an example of where the Reformed Christian movement is adopting some form of anti-Semitism, I suppose. And this was then picked up, or then coupled with Tobias going on a show. I can't remember if it was Iron Sharpens Iron or Eschatology Matters, but he talked about, I think it was Iron Sharpens Iron, he talked about this prominent pastor in Texas who is, at the very least, he insinuated importing some of this anti-Semitism stuff or being soft on it, being somewhat responsible for it, being mainstreamed in Reformed evangelicalism. So, and it was enough detail that Joel Webbin was like, people are going to figure out this is me. I'm going to get out ahead of this and I'm going to talk about it. I don't actually blame Joel for that. I understand that. You're looking at this, you're seeing it's gradually being made public. You're seeing what appears to almost be, you know, threatening statements concerning it, or at least you feel the pressure applied to you that these people know, or at least seem to know, potentially, that this is someone in your church, and now it's becoming publicly known that you're potentially a problem. And so you want to get out of ahead of it, and you want to show people that I'm trying to navigate this. I'm trying to disciple this member of my congregation. And I want to get out ahead of the negative things that are that people can easily jump to a conclusion about me on. So this makes a big difference. If you view it that way, then you're going to think Joel didn't start this. This process of this issue being made public started pre-Joel talking about it publicly. But I realized listening to Chris Arnzen's podcast that there's a group of people, at least, that think that Joel was the one who made this public, that this didn't have to be public, that Tobias did not make this issue public. Now, I suppose you could argue that by saying Tobias didn't explicitly mention Joel by name, attaching him to, the member of his congregation that shared this meme. And I could understand coming at it from that angle, I suppose. But to me, the big thing is it was heavily implied that this could that this was potentially Joel. And I think that's enough for, if someone can listen to it and it raises doubt in their minds that Joel could be the one who's responsible, that would, for approving of Holocaust denial stuff or, whatever, some nefarious problem, then I think that it makes sense why Joel would then respond to that. So that's the first, I think, dividing line. And where you come down on like who made this public is probably going to affect how you view the outcome. The other issue here is Joel being soft on Holocaust denial or Nazi ideology. And the evidence for this is, look at this guy who's been in Joel's church, who, according to Tobias, now that you have this meeting that was recorded between them before either of them were explicitly talking about this issue in a public way, where they talked privately, if you listen to that, you'll find Tobias, this guy was a member of Tobias's church who shared this insensitive meme. And Tobias seems to understand and know that this guy had some real Jew hatred beforehand, and hatred of Jewish people in some way. It's hard for me just because, like, from an outside perspective, like, I'm open to whatever, but I have to also leave room for maybe this guy's just being immature. Like, I don't know this guy, right? So that's how I've thought about it. Like, I'm open, but I'm not going to just jump to the conclusion that this guy is at that place, because Joel, who's his current pastor, is saying he's dropped those beliefs. And in his current place, Joel's discipled him, and he shared this meme, but he has shedded his hatred of Jewish people, if that ever was there. And, he doesn't lionize Hitler and that kind of thing. So you're ending up a little bit here with like a discrepancy between pastors. And if you don't want to weigh in on that and you just want to put that on the shelf, I understand doing that, but that's one of the charges. I'm not going to take that as necessarily evidence that Joel's soft on this kind of thing, just because, Joel is saying, and he would be the one with firsthand knowledge in the account of this, that he has checked this guy out, that he's discipling him, that he's also even issued private statements warning about a podcast that does share some of these kinds of views, and that's Joel, right? So I don't have a reason, I'll say, to believe that about him. But the other pieces of evidence that are out there for this are that why doesn't Joel control his followers? And I think the issue here is there's a conflation of Nazi ideologues that are anons on Twitter saying insensitive things, sometimes terrible things, and then pastors with a public reputation. They're not the same thing. Even if there's people weighing in and they don't like Tobias, and, why would they if they're someone who's like, hates Jewish people and wants to, re-envision the Holocaust narrative, they're probably not going to like Tobias. So, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're by default followers of Joel, and it doesn't mean that Joel's necessarily responsible for them. I want to give the benefit of the doubt to Joel on this one. I haven't heard evidence that these guys are just, they're followers of Joel and they're, that they're getting this from Joel. I think that's a more important thing, that they're getting this from Joel. It's kind of like Welcome to X, right? That's how X has been for years. It shouldn't be that way. I've rebuked some of these comments I've seen from guys that are terrible in my opinion, but this doesn't mean that they're like on Team Joel. Necessarily. It may mean that they just, you know, some of these guys look for opportunities to promote their ideology, and any scuffle that's even tangentially related to Nazism or Holocaust stuff, they're going to find their way into that. So careful of that assumption. That assumption could also be slanderous because, again, Joel helped craft this statement that Joseph Spurgeon made that goes against Nazi ideology. Like, Joel's not in sync with that. And then the other thing is that there's these underlying issues that are being lost in all of this. And this is one of the things that I found the most frustrating, because I've tried to say, get the stuff right that's obvious for you. Like, get the stuff right with Joel, that the insinuation that he made up the fact that he was pressured into disciplining this guy in his church or excommunicating him. Clearly there was pressure. You listen to the recording of the private meeting between Tobias and Joel, there was pressure. So let's get past that. And once we're past that, we can together try to focus on these other issues that you're concerned with, but it's like, we can't get past that. And I think the order, you know, like, it seems like there's guys who think that, no, you need to first show that you're against Nazi ideology or against anti-Semitism or something like that. It's like, okay, Joel has signaled publicly that he is against Nazi ideology on some level, but it's not, he hasn't signed the Antioch Declaration, I guess, or he hasn't done it maybe as strongly as someone. I don't know exactly. I'm speculating at this, but that sentiment seems to be there. I don't think when there's a personal problem that involves a guy's character, in this case, Joel's character, did he lie? I think that for him to be on the team, to get him on your team against Nazi ideology, you have to rectify that first. I don't even know how you begin to form a united front. It's very difficult to do that when he's not brought to the table, and then have the expectation that he should sign the document or whatever, when he wasn't even made known about it until it was practically public, or right before it was public. And then there's things in it that, you know, as you're reading it, that seem to indicate this isn't just about that. This is about other issues. And even things that when I was reading it, I was like, this sounds like it's about Joel. And I didn't even know, maybe it's not, but it sure sounds that way. Like, I wouldn't expect Joel to get on board with that. There has to be some private reconciliation first, but that's what the holdup is. So that's another kind of like cart before the horse thing. Like, which one happens first? Well, they can both happen somewhat simultaneously, but you're going to be working apart from each other and not together until the personal issues are dealt with. So yeah, hopefully everyone can come to the table and talk about what Tobias says are the underlying issues. I'm totally for that, but this other stuff has to be dealt with. So the other thing I noticed is, for guys who have known Tobias for a while, this was on Chris Aronson's podcast, like, Tobias wouldn't slander. That's not his character. That may be true. I actually am very open to the idea that Tobias is, I don't know him well, but from my communication, he's been humble with me. I think he seems sincere and genuine. Again, though, it's hard. I don't know him well, but I haven't seen anything to contradict that at this point. Why he's taken so long to issue any kind of statement about where, you know, what he said and how it at the very least, it made the wrong impression about Joel. I don't know. I don't know why that's taken so long. The longer it goes, though, the more it pains me for him, though, because it hurts his character, and it hurts the character of people that are sticking up for him. It's been a month now. Like, and I know James White's out there saying, like, you got to be patient. I realize there's, like, yeah, I mean, if I can understand a week. I can even understand 2 weeks. I understand things come up and you're busy as a pastor and there's other more important things, but peace in the body is very, very important. And it's like when a statement comes out and his name is right there as one of the draftees, like it just raises the question, like, was this important to you, but not this? The look is so bad. And so I just, again, I appeal, please, let's get this worked out publicly. Now, the other thing is, there's this understanding that there's a duty to provide recordings to Tobias. So let me actually put a cap on the last issue first. Tobias wouldn't slander. That may be true, okay? But the effect of what he has said has called into question Joel's character in ways that don't seem to be accurate. So whether he intended it or not, that's an outstanding issue. All right, so the next thing. Joel has a duty to provide Tobias with the recording. Now, the recording's out there publicly now. This is one of those things. I know why Joel did not provide to. So first of all, my understanding is Joel actually didn't know this meeting was recorded. That vindicates him in some way. But when he did get a hold of it, I think the concern was that whatever trust could have been there wasn't there with Tobias, and he didn't want to just give it to Tobias because he thought maybe Tobias would find something in it and then try to use whatever was in it to twist against Joel or to use against Joel. And he didn't want that to happen. So because trust had been broken, if trust was still there, I think that probably would have been fine, but trust had been broken. And so he didn't feel the obligation to provide that recording to Tobias. And I know Tobias said that meant he was held hostage. My personal view on this is Tobias represented a meeting that he lived through, that he was there for. He represented it, I think, in part wrongly. That said, if Joel's going to come out and say, you represented this wrongly, I would want to at least show clips where Tobias did that. And that is what Joel did. So he didn't release the entire meeting, but he released those clips. There's a guardedness there. I don't necessarily think Joel is required to do that, to be quite honest with you. I think it's a nice thing for Joel to do it. If I was in Joel's position, I think I would do it just because I listened to the recording and I thought, yeah, Joel doesn't really have anything to hide here. But I totally understand where he's coming from. And I don't think it was wrong for him to not release that immediately to Tobias. This gets into the weeds because he did release it to other people to listen to. And this is where I know some people have a problem. Why not Tobias? And why these people? Well, read between the lines. Joel trusts these guys in whatever chat group it was that he released this. I wasn't in that chat group. He must trust those guys more than he does Tobias. And he's probably trying to get second opinions on what was said. And if I were Joel, I would feel targeted. I would feel like I don't want to give ammunition to someone who seems like they're trying to rip me down. I get it. And I think that understanding at least needs to be there for why Joel would have felt that way. Now, but now it's a non-issue because that recording's been public for now, what? At 2.5-3 weeks it's been public. It's been quite a bit of time and enough time. Tobias has had it for a long enough time to make a statement. There's no doubt. So I kind of put this on the shelf as more or less a tertiary or a non-issue. And then there's this charge of collaboration that one side is saying that Joe Boot and James White and Douglas Wilson collaborated with Tobias on this and, going against Joel Webbin. And the other side is saying there was no collaboration. It's hard looking at all the moving parts to see why Joel wouldn't think that. So if there was no collaboration, it's like all the circumstantial evidence is there for there to make it look like there is. I.e., Tobias is saying in this private recording that he agrees with those gentlemen I just mentioned. I.e., those guys all shared Tobias's video against Joel. I.e., this statement comes out that has what appear to be, if you're Joel, I would think you would see in it potential things that are talking about him. And who are the people who drafted it? It's all those guys. The circumstantial evidence isn't good. It looks like there is collaboration. So if there's not, that needs to be said clearly ASAP, but it hasn't been. And it just leaves the impression that there's collaboration going on. So I understand why people looking at it from Joel's perspective think that. And then the other thing that I see as a dividing line is this whole, like, yeah, but there's things that Joel has participated in that are neo-Nazi adjacent. And so that would be like white boy summer memes and the phrase no more brother wars. These are the two specific examples that came up in Chris Arnson's podcast. And, you know, I have a hard time wrapping my head around this a little bit. I do, the white boy summer thing, I understand a little more, but I'm someone who, I'm not like a diehard white boy summer guy, but I am someone who has, I think twice, put a white boy summer meme out there. And I explained, actually both times I put one out there, that this is something open, this is not restrictive, and all this is a pushback against the ways that white people and men in particular have been attacked. And so it's a funny, humorous way, mostly like a non-threatening way to say, hey, white people actually aren't all that bad. And it's mostly centered around the sports that white people enjoy during the summer, like water skiing and that kind of thing. And so that's how I've understood it. And that's how I think it's been since the beginning, broadly speaking. Now, yeah, there's some guys who have used this to put in Nazi imagery and that kind of thing. I don't think that necessarily defines the entire, I don't even know if you could call it a movement, but the entire ethos. You got guys like Jack Posobiec, right, who are waving white boy summer flags and things. It's literally, I think, just a reaction to look at the calendar, look at all these things that are that are being introduced that we're supposed to celebrate, and look at the things that have been taken off the calendar, like Columbus Day, like President's Day is now, you know, we took Abraham Lincoln and Washington's birthday to combine it, but now we have, you know, all these other holidays that promote perversion or promote some kind of diversity, but it's like you're not allowed to celebrate white people and you're not allowed to celebrate men. And so this is just like a humorous way to be like, hey, I think actually we're pretty good. And we're not all that bad. We're not the devil. And anyone can be involved. I mean, I've seen white boy summer memes that are like promoting Clarence Thomas. So you can't tell me that this is like a monolithic Nazi kind of thing. But that's how some of these guys tend to think about it. Like this is like Nazi-esque by definition, which I don't buy. I don't know, I could go on and on about this, but like associations are hard things and it depends how close they are. But like the Klan, like think about the American flag for a minute. Like, are you okay with the American flag? I don't know. Like the Klan used it heavily in the progressive era. There's whole pictures of them marching in Washington with the American flag. It flew over the slave ships coming here. It flew over the troops that took out the Native Americans out west and put them on reservations. It flew over the ships that colonized other areas of the world during the Spanish-American War. It's been used as this horrible, hateful symbol. You know, obviously, I don't believe that the American flag is reducible to those things, but I can certainly find you more than enough. I'm sure if you went to the Klan website, I haven't done this, so I don't know, but if you went there, I'm sure you'd find Americana iconography. Does that mean that like American flag is bad? No. So you have to be careful with that kind of thing, that guilt by association thing. Like, I think there are ways in which it can be valid. If there's too tight of a connection or too close of a connection, or if someone's waving a swastika around, right? Like that's what, like it is so connected in the majority of people's minds to a certain socialist regime from the 1930s and 40s in Germany that, it's hard to like not associate it with that. But then again, there are people who are Hindu and there are people who are, Southwestern Native American tribes who use that symbol. So it also even then depends who are you talking about? What's the context they're bringing to it? So just be careful with that kind of stuff is what I would caution. I don't think Joel Webbin he's signaling to neo-Nazis because he enjoyed a white boy summer meme at some point. And the other thing is that, you know, the no more brother wars thing, like that's a World War I phrase. That's not even a World War II phrase. I like, if you go back to the origin of that phrase, I always thought that had to do with the Christmas truce during World War I, where you had Germans and you had Allied forces getting together and celebrating Christmas, and then they shooting at each other the next day. And there was, I don't know if it was a poet or someone had said no more brother wars in relation to that, and then it caught on. That's not even a World War II thing. So why in the world are people saying that that's a Nazi thing to say? I don't get it, guys. Like, maybe a Nazi said it somewhere. Okay, but that's not the root of it. That's not why many people have used the phrase. So I think these things can be navigated through, but there is a lot of poisoning the well, and there's a lot of conclusions being jumped to. And I don't think it's all on one side, by the way. I think there's some legitimate concerns with, there are some guys who want to take advantage of this situation, and they are, and believe me, they're making inroads. I think that there are podcasts and actual people who are more Nazi ideologues who are benefiting from this immensely, because they see someone who's concerned with that with perceived egg on the face, and now it gives them a platform to say, that's what everyone who's concerned with Nazi ideology is like. It's giving them that opportunity. Am I concerned about that kind of thing? Yeah, because I don't want guys to go down, or women, as the case may be, to go down a dark road that's going to leave them high and dry, that provides simplistic explanations for the world that's around them that actually aren't ultimately true. And that do, I think, lead you down the road of denying certain theological things. I think, now, it depends how far down you get on the road. But yeah, I think, like I told someone the other day, I had no problem saying it. Like, what's the problem with Nazi ideology? I was like, well, three things off the top of my head. You got the lie aspect, the fact that there's a Darwinian base to the ideology. You can't really read Mein Kampf without noticing that. Secondly, there's this element of murder that was part of policy. It wasn't just that, you know, okay, you have abortions in the United States. I got it. But like, this is, you have in Nazi Germany, this systematic killing of people that did no crime as a matter of policy. So you don't, and I understand America's terrible on this issue of abortion, but America didn't have, and they don't have now, a systematic, like the government is going to go in and eliminate this demographic. That it's still really bad that the government allows you to, in certain states, and I guess some people would argue in every state at some level, to eliminate a living person. But it's not a matter of public policy in the sense that the government's doing. So I would say murder is part of the problem here. That's an objective sin. And then I think you have this idea that the Volk is deified and then conflated with the purposes of the government. So there's just no accountability. The Volk becomes the standard. And that ultimately ends in an idolatry. Now, it's not the same as what people are saying about racial vainglory, or not at racial, but like ethnic. I don't know what word's being used. National vainglory. It's not the same thing. It's not like, you know, the Gospel Coalition saying, oh, if you love your family too much, and then, well, if you love your nation too much, you know, it's not the level of love. It's the kicking God out and replacing him with the will of supposedly the people, but it's actually the state. Like, that's, and that takes more to, like, I could do a whole podcast probably fleshing that out more. I'd have to do some digging, but I've read enough to know, like, yeah, that was going on, and that was very much part of the justification of Germany. So those three things alone, those are identifiable sinful things. And if you go down those paths, that puts you in conflict with the Bible at some level. Now, thankfully, not every guy probably who is on this path is down all the way. But I think it's important, and that's why Joseph Spurgeon and I talked about this issue, to point out where this goes wrong. And it's the same thing with other ideologies. The same thing with liberalism, by the way, which everyone just seems to assume. It's the same thing with, you know, this multicultural neutralist society. Like, it's the same thing with communism and the woke ideology, social justice. Like, you know, I've tried to take the same posture on these things, but knowing that liberalism and the social justice stuff are actually, in a way, in one sense, way more threatening, just because they have so much institutional power to enact their, to get their agenda into a policy form. So yeah, like, am I concerned? Sure. But like, I'm way more concerned, and I'm going to devote way more time to like the threats that actually are out there, exerting influence that affects my family directly. So anyway, that's more of my take on it. But I do think there are misunderstandings and there's ways to navigate this. And I do think both sides, and this is where I want to caution people who are really gung-ho, like Tobias is terrible, whatever you're saying online, just be careful with that. Like, be measured. I think that there's a different assumption, a bundle of assumptions, I think some of these guys who are on Tobias's side are coming with. And they're offended in part because Tobias has a reputation he's built over the years. He has taken strong stands. And he may have pure motives in all this. But like I say again, the longer time goes by without at least an admission that there was a misrepresentation of Joel's character, the more it's hard to defend that kind of thing. So I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping that these guys can work it out. I'm really happy to see some of the adjustments, you could say, that Joel's made. And that's my thought on it. Hopefully that helps for some of you navigate this better and get clarity on it and see where I'm coming from. And God bless. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big.